And welcome. You are tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio presents Holzer's Ghosts, the curious case of Bishop Pike. But Dave, I watched all 23 episodes of the Holzer Files. You guys never did a case called the curious case of Bishop Pike. You're right, we didn't. We also didn't go to Amityville, but that didn't stop me from doing an Amityville special. Why? Because I'm Dave Schrader, damn it. And when there's a topic I want to cover, even if I haven't gone there, we're going to cover it. And that's what we're doing tonight. I want to apologize to all of you watching the live stream. I'm having an allergic reaction to something. So I'm looking splotchy and red and crazy, and I apologize. Unshaven because my face is road rash underneath this junk. So I do apologize. Bear with us. Thankfully, our guest is much better looking, so direct your attention towards him. We've got some interesting stuff coming up I wanted to chat with you guys about. We're going to be doing, I think there's two or three episodes left from season one of the Holzer Files that we have yet to tackle on an episode of Holzer's Ghosts. And we do want to tackle that relatively soon. So we're going to do that. And I believe it starts next week. We'll be back and we're going to be talking about, Grave Secrets, The Haunting of the Howard Dickinson House, season one, episode 8. We'll be doing that. I also wanted to mention, hey, the autograph set kit is still available if you're interested. It's easy to obtain. Here's what you need to do. Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com for $20. You get my autograph book, The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal, but it's written for everybody. We've got the book, we've got the Darkness Radio decal, the autographed Holzer Files card, and I can personalize for it. If you're interested, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com, and we will be happy to get those kits out to you. It's $20 plus, I think, $5 shipping and handling. You can also buy just the book or just the decal. Let me know. I'm also curious, guys, on every episode of the Holzer Files, I carried with me, which is strange because I'm not Catholic, I carried with me a blessed rosary. I have, I think, 20 of those rosaries because I got a different blessed rosary at every location to carry with me just in case. You know, like Elvis said, you know, he had the Star of David, the crucifix and other logos on. And they said, well, which one do you subscribe to? He said he just wants to cover all the bases. So when he has to get to heaven, he's ready for it. So I do have those. And I might make those available. If you're interested, let me know. Email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I will sell you guys the 20 or so rosaries that I used on the episodes, one on each different episode. So if you are interested, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Let's get started with tonight's case. This comes from the case files of Dr. Hans Holzer, The Psychic World of Bishop Pike. This gentleman, Bishop Pike, what a remarkable guy. We're going to find out a lot about him. If you are not familiar, you guys are in for a treat tonight. Hans Holzer was a very good friend of Bishop Pike's and wrote kind of what is considered to be the book about Bishop Pike's life, his death, and the strange aftermath of this case. But when I wanted to set forward and do this episode, there's not many of the original authors around, nobody that was available to talk to me about this. So again, I set out one of the best researchers I know. He is a fan of the paranormal, a researcher himself. And when I started talking to him about Bishop Pike, he knew who it was and was happy to dive in headlong to get into this. So I want to make sure I get all of the proper accolades in place. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us tonight, Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer, is a fourth generation psychic medium who communicates with spirits. He's an Oxford educated attorney licensed to practice law in Florida, Washington, D.C., and before the United States Supreme Court. The media dubbed him the psychic explorer because he travels to mystical locations in remote corners of the world to examine ancient mysteries and supernatural phenomena. Mark has appeared nationwide on TV and radio, including CBS TV's The Doctors, Gaia TV's Beyond Belief with George Norrie. He's the co-host of The Psychic and The Doc on the Transformation Network, and he is a featured speaker at conferences, expos, and universities, which include Brown, Columbia, Harvard, and Yale. Mark Anthony is a columnist for Best Holistic Life magazine and the best-selling author of Never Letting Go, and Evidence of Eternity. His highly anticipated cutting-edge new book, The Afterlife Frequency, will be released this October 2021. Ladies and gentlemen, please help us welcome back one of our all-time favorite guests and one of yours, the one, the only, Mark Anthony. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Dave. Thank you for having me on Darkness Radio. And I want to say to the Army of Darkness, thank you. You know, Dave, everywhere I go when I'm on tour and, you know, before COVID, and I'm looking forward to going back, every single city from Miami to Seattle to Honolulu, somebody or a group of somebody's come up and say, we're part of the Army of Darkness. So awesome. You got a great fan base. They're awesome people. And I really thank you for having me back on the show.
Well, not only are we having you back on the show, Mark, but I don't know if you heard a week or so ago, I announced that 2022 will be the return of Darkness Radio events.
Right.
I know we became friends at the tail end of my run at Darkness Radio events. And I think you only made it to one or two, but we're rebooting. Can you believe it's going to be 10 years since the last Darkness Radio event?
Well, you know what? It's, you know, I'd like to say it seems like yesterday, but you and I have been so busy. It seems like a lot of yesterdays. But yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years. But I think that's fantastic because let me tell you something. I speak at a lot of conferences and they're all great, but the Darkness Radio conferences have that special edge. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that's because we all get high before the show. No, that's not true. We just have a lot of fun. So let's talk about this, Mark. Now, how familiar were you with Bishop Pike before I asked you to do a deep dive into this story?
Well, it's really hard if you study theology, philosophy, and psychic phenomenon like I'd have my whole life, not to be aware of Bishop Pike. And I'll tell you, Dave, I mean, he's got to be one of the most interesting and controversial characters in theology, certainly in the 20th century, and even his influence exists to this day. There's still backlash. I mean, I even found articles written as recently as 2018 where they're still reviewing him. In fact, I think it was there was a Catholic newspaper that called him. They do an article called The Heretic of the Week. And they actually wrote an article about Bishop Pike as their heretic of the week. And so what he did and what he said lives long after his physical life. So, and, you know, we could spend just an entire episode talking about the man's credentials. I mean, he graduated from several different colleges, University of Santa Clara, UCLA, University of Southern California, Yale University. He got a law degree, and not just a law degree, but a JSD, which is a fairly rare degree. It's the equivalent of a PhD in law, which focuses mostly on research. And then he even went to the Union Theological Seminary. So he started his education in 1930 and didn't get his last degree until 1951. So as a young man in the 50s, he had a lot of degrees. So he's a smart guy.
I want to mention something just going forward, folks. We are going to be talking about a religious leader. And Bishop Pike is that. We're going to say a lot of different things tonight in regards to Bishop Pike and church. This is in no way means as a slap against any of the different religions or belief systems. But I'm going to go on record as saying, after the research and reading and interviews that do exist with Bishop Pike online that you can find, and the multitude of little bios that they did on Bishop Pike, this guy was controversial for a good reason. You know, this was the 50s and 60s, and he was at the forefront of the civil rights movement. He was part of that march with Dr. Martin Luther King. He didn't sit on the sidelines. He engaged because he believed in the gay rights assignments back in the 60s and 50s. He believed in human rights and religious ability to believe what you want to believe and not be chastised. And I found that so refreshing as I've been reading about him myself. This guy was a thinker, and I love the fact that in a lot of these little interviews that you'll see that he pops up on and live on YouTube and places like that, when they talk to the other religious leaders that were part of his church, it's funny because they're all like, listen, You know, the guy was either a complete madman or he was a complete genius. And I'm pretty sure his genius is what made him seem insane. And the only reason he pissed all of us off was because he was asking the questions none of us could answer. And he had answers none of us had ever thought of. And that's what I love about religion and spirituality, is challenging the paradigm, not in an egotistical way. Although there are many people who said that Bishop Pike became self-absorbed in his own ego, but I think it was because he was seeing the inadequacies of religious structure, not of spirituality, not of communing with God and Christ and whatever religious leader you believed in, but in the way that the edicts were put down, the theologies and dogmas of the church.
He did. And, you know, Dave, he did something else, which I found really fascinating. We've all heard of Senator Joseph McCarthy. Back in the 1950s, during the intensity of the Cold War, there was a senator, Joseph McCarthy, and he formed the Senate Committee on Un-American Activities. And McCarthy spearheaded investigations on all types of people. Hollywood was decimated. There's a movie, Trumbo, which stars, who's the guy that played William White? Bryan Cranston. Yeah, fantastic. Highly recommend it. I remember years and years and years ago, there was a movie, The Way We Were. It was all about the McCarthy hearings. And McCarthy was destroying a lot of people's lives because they were investigating anyone, even people who went to socialist or communist party meetings in the 1930s, just going to a meeting to listen to it. They were then charged with being a communist. The pressure he did even made Charlie Chaplin leave the United States. Well, Bishop Pike went public against him because McCarthy was trying to accuse nearly 700 ministers, pastors throughout the country as being communists. And when Pike was fearless and he stood up against him, and then President Eisenhower jumped on the Pike bandwagon. And because of Bishop Pike's attacks, counterattacks on Joseph McCarthy, that began his decline and fall. So it's really hard to just encapsulate what this man did. And like you brought out, Dave, and I want to say this too, we're going to be talking about some theological issues that he brought up that some people are going to find offensive. This does not represent Darkness Radio, nor, you know, me, Mark Anthony, necessarily our views. But he rose very quickly in the Episcopalian Church. Initially, Dave, he started out as a Roman Catholic. But then he went through a period of questioning his faith and became an agnostic, which means he didn't really believe in God, but he would accept evidence. And then he decided to go to the Episcopalian Church, which, you know, I was raised in the Catholic faith. And we always joke that Episcopalian is like diet Catholic. OK, you know, because a lot of the procedures, the rituals are the same, but they don't acknowledge, the Pope.
The guilt, but one third the calories.
Exactly. Yeah. Same great spirituality, less That's guilt. Right. And so he actually became the Bishop of California in the Episcopalian Church, which is quite a very big deal. But He wrote, I think, something like close to 50 books, and he questioned the existence. Well, he didn't question it. He said the Trinity is mythology, the virgin birth is mythology, and hell is mythology. And whoa, did that receive backlash, not just from the Episcopalians, but from every Christian denomination, which is why he is often called the apostate priest. An apostate is considered to be a traitor, or in the religious sense, somebody who completely rebukes and rejects. Other analysts call him an iconoclast. An iconoclast is one of those $1.25 words. And an iconoclast is someone who directly challenges traditionally held beliefs. And from the analysis that I've done of Bishop Pike, he looked at Christianity as something that we need to embrace the teachings of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Jesus is a minister. It's the love, the peace, the understanding, the forgiveness. It was the true spirit of the scriptures, not a believe what we tell you and don't question it, because if you do, then you go to hell. And so in that respect, that type of thinking was very revolutionary in the 1950s and 60s. But, you know, Dave, he was also a child of his times, because it was the 1960s where students began to protest against the Vietnam War. There was the love movement, rock and roll. Traditional institutions were shaken to their very core by all these new beliefs. And Bishop Pike was at the head of the pack when it came to religion.
And what was great, and trust me, folks, there's psychic revelations, ghostly stories, and a lot of the paranormal. Obviously, that's why Dr. Holzer got involved and wrote the book, The Psychic World of Bishop Pike. We're going to get into that. But in order to discuss his life, we have to discuss all of it and talk about where he came from, why his life took some strange turns. And the fact that he stood up, which I think is – very brave as a religious leader, not denouncing the church, not denouncing the religion or the positive aspects of it, but denouncing some of the, listen, we're coming into a new age, which I think is why people in the 20th and 21st century have strayed away, because it does seem like we're talking about fables and folklore more instead of teaching about the meaning. It's sometimes more in the esoteric and the mythological aspects of this. And he saw that 40, 50 years ago and realized, in order to keep on top of this wave, we need to contemporize, not devalue, but contemporize what we're discussing and what these mean to all of us. And that was very powerful, which I think is what spoke to Dr. Holzer as well. This man's conviction to every aspect of what he did. And this guy, again, aside from being out on the forefront for gay rights and civil rights, he was against the war. He was out on Haight-Ashbury with the hippies and not chastising or, you know, yelling at the, he was there supporting the love movement, supporting the concept of what they were trying to achieve, which that speaks volumes about what real spirituality is and why he might be connected in such a big way to a much wider world than most spiritual leaders would be considered to be a part of.
Well, on the flip side of the karmic coin, he also had a very colorful personal life. And I mean, he was a womanizer. He battled alcoholism, is a heavy chain smoker. You know, and the joke I always have heard is smoking doesn't send you to hell. It just makes you smell like you've been there. Right. you know, he was married to Jane Alves in 1938, divorced her in 1941. 1942, married Esther Yanofsky, divorced her in 1965. But when he was married to Esther Yanofsky, he was living with his secretary, Mayan Hackett Berggren. And there's a lot of controversy what was going on there. Not only was he living with his secretary, but apparently she overdosed on sleeping pills in his apartment. And according to police reports, he moved her body down the hall to her room, destroyed evidence, lied to the police, and yet performed her eulogy at her memorial. So this was leaking out into the Episcopalian church. And then in 1968, he married Diane Kennedy, who was one of his students. She was also 24 years younger than him. But the thing is, so he had this, you know, very checkered personal life. And, you know, come on, you can't always trash somebody for having difficult personal relationships. But the whole episode with Mayan Hackett Berggren was very suspicious. That didn't bode well with a lot of people. But, you know, Dave, if he did have a soulmate in this life, it was Diane Kennedy. And Diane Kennedy is not only still alive, but she is an ordained priest in the Episcopalian religion, and she's active. So she's got to be, she's got to be in her late 70s or 80s by now. So she's still going, and she turned an organization into the Bishop Pike Foundation, which then merged with it was called the Love Foundation, and it still exists now. and it's for helping youth find themselves and their leadership abilities. So the good aspects of his life continue, but where things start getting mystical, and I know this is what you want to talk to, and for those of us, all right, certainly for people who watch the Holzer Files, for people who are fans of Darkness Radio, for people who are familiar with my work, when there is the death of a loved one, mm-hmm. and the devastation, and I know Dave knows this. I had the privilege and the honor of knowing your mom, Dave. I loved her. She was just awesome. I remember eating cherry pie with her at Estes Park. I bought this cherry pie. We're all sitting there eating cherry pie together. And, you know, that's when I think your mom, I think of cherry pie and laughing and having a great time. And then when somebody you love dies, it's very devastating. And this happened to Bishop Pike. Even though he was already a very spiritual man, his son, his 20-year-old son, took a gun to his head. And it was in New York City. And Bishop Pike, they'd had an off and on relationship, but toward the end of his son's life, they had been able to reunite. And his son died by suicide. And Bishop Pike was in London at the time. I believe actually he was in Cambridge. He was over in the UK because of, you know, the Anglican Church, which is the Episcopalian Church. Obviously devastated. His son dies.
Right.
But then strange things begin to happen.
I've got to think, you know, it's one thing for the layperson to lose somebody. But when you're a religious leader whose son not only dies, which is devastating and tragic in its own, but took his own life, that has got to put you into a very interesting position theologically, religiously, mentally, of how do you, as a leader and a movement, how do you keep pushing forward and still maintain kind of class and style through all of that? And that, I can't even imagine what he must have been going through, especially knowing that they had been estranged for so long and they were finally on the road to recovery. Things were finally getting back and they had just come back from a trip together, I believe.
Yeah, they did.
And then he had to go off to do some work and his son took his own life. And that, I can't imagine. I mean, does it say much about what his life was like when that happened? How did that affect him?
It was absolutely crushing for him. And strange things, according to his book, The Other Side, which we're going to be talking about, which we are talking about, he started noticing in his apartment, like postcards arranged in this shape like that. Then he noticed safety pins and bent in the same position. And he started seeing all these things in the same position. And then he looked at a clock that had stopped working, and it was 8:19. And then he looked at the postcards, he looked at the safety pins all over his apartment. There were things in this shape, the shape of 8:19. And then it dawned on him that was the time when his son took his life. So he immediately started sensing that this could be, it's what I call in my work, a frequency beacon, where a spirit sends you signs and directs your attention to things. Yeah, exactly. And so that then opened a new door, a new facet to Bishop Pike, where he began to turn to psychics to see if he could communicate, get in contact with his son, because it appeared to him that his son was sending these signs. And, like, you know, I term this a frequency beacon because I've seen in my colleagues who are mediums, how many times have people lost a loved one and then they look at a clock and they see like 8:19, or they hear that one song, or they're prompted to turn on the radio and there's that song, or they smell the familiar scent, but there's no source for it. Okay, this is how spirits do reach out to us. And so Bishop Pike was one of the first people to begin documenting this in a coherent and intelligent manner.
Well, he also, there were some other funnier aspects, right? Like a woman that they knew that had bangs that his son Jimmy did not like. She suddenly singed her hair and lost her bangs, right? It was just weird little things. The temperature in the apartment, they would keep it low, and Bishop Pike would return to see the temperature had been turned back to what Jimmy always set it to. Right. So they would just keep running into these instances that they were not alone. And I like the fact that he went outside the normal realm. And I wonder how many religious leaders do this, but don't do it as public. Look for help and look for connection with that other side.
Well, I can attest to that from firsthand knowledge. A lot of members of the clergy have come to me for readings. I've had Catholic priests, Baptist ministers, Episcopalians, Methodists, Hindus, Buddhists, and Muslims come to me to make connections with their loved ones in spirit. And it's always fascinating. And I would imagine that Bishop Pike had these type of discussions as well. And I'm like, you know, it says, you know, this in the Bible, like mediums are not a god. And they're like, yeah, well, you know, a couple of verses around, you know, eating shellfish is an abomination. And, you know, supposed to stone your daughter to death if she walks into a temple menstruating. So they said, you know, you have to take this in perspective. And also, the Bible is Old and New Testament is loaded with stories of people with psychic abilities. And when we're the bad guys, we're witches or mediums. And when we're good guys, we're prophets or prophetesses. And so a lot of them, and in fact, the Catholic priests that I've done readings for told me in no uncertain terms, the Vatican is very well aware of psychic phenomena. What do you think the saints were? And our official statement, and this holds true with the Episcopalians and others, is, yeah, you're not supposed to do it. But they also realize that it is a gift and that spirits are capable of communicating with us. And if we know how to pay attention to the signs. And so that's why people in the clergy find themselves in this paradox, this terrible dilemma when they're crushed by grief. And unfortunately, they don't find scripture comforting. Now, that being said,
you know, it's
interesting. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings,
right?
But I've heard this, I don't know, about 4,000 times.
Well, I've talked to religious leaders from many different sects, and from rabbis to priests to pastors to ministers. And you know what? A lot of them tell me on the sly, they're like, I can quite often see the spirits at the funeral, and I've spoken to and done these things. But if I say this out loud, people will A, think I'm nuts, or B, think I must be working with the devil, when truly what we're given and is given in the Bible, Jesus even says that which I do, so can you, if you have belief in my Father, right? These leaders have what's called discernment.
Right.
And gives them this ability. And many religious leaders I know are extremely mediumistic and psychic.
Yes.
Not everyone, of course, not everybody. And I'm sure some of them fight it back for fear what it could mean. But when most of them are realizing that the messages they're getting are love messages, not you should kill your entire, you know, congregation with Kool-Aid. I mean, that's when you start to question where you're getting your information. Right?
Yeah. You know?
So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say, so that was, you know, that's an interesting element. So he is not necessarily having the communication, but his son's spirit is so strong. And I know people were saying, well, he was just dealing with the grieving process, which is powerful, but other people were witnessing this phenomena around him as well.
Correct. And, he started consulting with a number of mediums. Ethel Johnson Myers, who worked with Hans Holzer during the Amityville investigation, and I hold her in very high regard. Ina Twigg, she's a British medium. From what I understand, the connections that she made with him were very good, a lot of evidence, and also there was some fascinating.
And let's mention that Ina Twigg was really the first medium that he sought counsel with, and
in Britain,
she made the communication with him the first time, which she gave a few elements that, you know, it was somewhat generalized. He was
right
attuned to that, that some of it was generalized, but there were just enough little bits dropped that were specific to his son that he knew she couldn't know this. And when he saw her the second time and she dug deeper and he wanted to understand his son's death more, she said it, you know, had something to do with his sense of person and maybe a femininity. Does this make sense? And Bishop Pike never talked openly about it, but it did make sense to him that his son might be dealing with homosexual feelings or different senses that made him question and feel weak, which that really struck home with him. And I thought was interesting because her story is equally weird and kind of cool the way they connect in this, but he was seeking this and he was doing it publicly too. I thought that was pretty compelling. I don't know. Was it in the sense of Harry Houdini? Do I go see these people and see if they're charlatans, or do I give this grieving father, give these people the opportunity to prove to me that there is something beyond what we all thought we knew?
Well, I think a part of what happened with Bishop Pike is he got so excited when he was working with legitimate mediums and getting evidence, because it was a big mystery why Jim Jr., his son, took his own life. But then it came out in Ina's reading about his conflict being homosexual, which is also fascinating because Bishop Pike then was at the forefront of the gay rights movement, which in the 1960s was about as fringe as it got.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays it's mainstream. Who doesn't know someone who's gay? I mean, you know, we have Secretary Pete Buttigieg. All right. So, you know, being gay is like no big deal. But back in the 60s, it was. But the other thing about Bishop Pike is he was kind of the first really flashy televangelist because he had a TV show. And then he went beyond what anybody's done. And he had medium Arthur Ford come on the show and conduct a seance. In other words, Arthur Ford did a reading for him on television and allegedly, and I'm saying allegedly here because I want to talk about this, get in touch with his son. It was discovered after Arthur Ford's death that in his home, there were scrapbooks filled with articles and information about Bishop Pike and his son. Hmm. So the allegation is that Ford was doing research on Bishop Pike and on Jim Jr. prior to the readings. I don't know if he did. I don't know if he was collecting that information after the fact to see if what he brought up, you know, could be verified or it was done before the fact. But I think it's necessary for us to bring this up. And the reason that I do, Dave, is you and I have been working together a long time. And what I've always admired about you is you go with evidence, okay, before you jump to any conclusions. And that's the mark of a true paranormal investigator, is implementing the scientific method, observation before we jump to conclusions. But the problem with mediumship is it's fraught with the history of mediumship is fraught with fraud. I've seen demonstrations, and I'm not going to mention any names, that to me are nothing more than charlatanism. There are mediums who have criminal records, who are clearly researching people ahead of time. But there's always some bad apples in every barrel of apples. The mediums that Dave works with, the ones that I associate with, are the legitimate mediums. And this is a real phenomenon. Being able to communicate with spirits is part of the human experience. And Bishop Pike was the first major theological celebrity to go public with this.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss more of the psychic world and curious case of Bishop Pike. This is Hans Holzer's book. You can find versions of paperback online. As a matter of fact, if you go to darknessradio.com, click on the shop tab and go to our Amazon shop. I think I've got it listed there so you can find it. Hardcover copies are extremely rare, and you will pay a pretty penny just to give you the heads up on that. During the break, go check out Mark's website, and he has a brand new website, afterlifefrequency.com, and you can find more information about Mark, his readings, his work, his new book that's coming out, afterlifefrequency.com. So check that out. We'll be back. We've got more to discuss. You're tuned into the best in paranormal podcasting. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dave Schrader. This is Darkness Radio. You can listen to us every week. We have brand new episodes Wednesdays and Thursdays. Wednesday, Supernatural News Parashare, where we take your stories. Remember, if you've had a weird encounter with the supernatural, we want to hear about it. Email them to me, dave@darknessradio.com. dave@darknessradio.com. Send me your stories. And if you're a good writer and can keep it to two pages with paragraphs and well-spelled, we may feature it in an upcoming Theater of the Mind aspect of our episodes. If you haven't heard that yet, you'll be happy to hear those when you tune in to the shows on Wednesdays. Thursdays, we always have a guest, and we do some of these special live events Thursday nights. The podcast version of it is available on Fridays. So you can always tune into the best in paranormal podcasting. Just look for Darkness Radio no matter how or where you listen to your favorite podcasts. As a matter of fact, you can always just ask Siri or Alexa. Trying to be cool so that we don't set off all the stuff in your house. Just ask them to play the new episode of Darkness Radio and they'll fire off. I know we're on Amazon Music. We're on so many different Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it. We're out there. So find us, listen to us, share us. For those of you that are new and only watching this on video, that's why I'm doing the quick introduction. Also, come see me this July at the Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri. For Haunted in Havana, there are tickets still available. Amy Bruni, Adam Berry will be there. I'll be there with Cindy Kaza. There are other great celebrities from the paranormal realm that will be on hand as we investigate the Oddfellows Asylum at the Belvoir Winery. And that's coming up middle part of July, but there are a handful of tickets still available. So go check out strange-escapes.com or just go to darknessevents.com. Darkness events and all of the different events I'm a part of this year will appear there, and you can click on it and find out more. Get your tickets and meet me. I'll be in New Jersey and I'll be out in Texas and California and Nevada. And we've got a lot of great places we're going to be heading out to this year. And I hope that you'll come on out and see us. Mark Anthony, one of our very favorite guests in the world, is back with us tonight. And we're talking about the curious case of Bishop Pike. And we've been discussing kind of his background and his religious upbringing. Now he starts bringing to the public the concept of mediums, soothsaying, speaking, necromancing. Mark, I've got to guess that's pissing off the church leaders of the time.
Absolutely. This then was the straw that broke the camel's back in the Episcopalian hierarchy, because then they wanted to get rid of Bishop Pike. And Bishop Pike said, well, if you're going to do it publicly and put me on trial for heresy. Okay, and it's like, whoa, a heresy trial. All right, now, back in the medieval era, you would expect heresy. I mean, through the Renaissance, Spanish Inquisition.
The Inquisition, what a jerk, the Inquisition.
Or right. Remember Monty Python, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly.
Well, nobody expected a heresy trial in the mid-20th century either. And then all of a sudden, the Episcopalian Church found itself in quite the dilemma. Do we take this guy who is loved by millions? He's a TV star. He's cutting edge. He stood against Joseph McCarthy, marched with Martin Luther King Jr. Do we put him on trial for heresy? And what happened is the Episcopalian Church backed off and they issued a decree that there is no heresy in the Episcopalian Church. And so so another one of his accomplishments, and this one I don't think he necessarily intended, but he got rid of heresy trials.
What he intended was genius, because if you take me to court, if you try to strip me of these titles legally, I get to speak out and explain my position, which is going to upset a lot of apple carts. And they were trying to, I love watching the little documentaries, because you do see his contemporaries. They're all frustrated by him, but they loved him. They respected and revered his ability to turn people into thinkers instead of just the flock of sheep. They engaged, which is what we shouldn't just be going through motions every week of, okay, it's a hymn, it's a prayer, it's a quick message, it's a hymn, it's a prayer. That's not engaging. He engaged and dragged people into thinking. And now he's bringing in the concept of communing with the dead. Now, is he having psychic awakenings during this himself?
Yes, it was widely believed by his inner circle, particularly Diane Kennedy, his last wife, that he himself possessed psychic ability. I don't think he necessarily conducted readings, but he was so open to it that in observing the phenomenon. And, you know, Dave, I've seen you work. And no, you're not a medium, but you can feel when spirits are around.
I am definitely a 2XL, not a medium.
Right. But the thing is, you do feel when spirits are around, and everybody can, because we all have the same basic physiology. Is some people are better at it than others. You know, and that's what I've always said. Some people are better athletes than others. Some people are better mathematicians than others. Some people are better psychics than others. It's just the way it works. And so he really, really dove into this phenomenon. And it's really a shame that he died when he did. And if we can, I do want to talk about his death, because...
Oh, yeah, of course. We're going to get into that.
We got to talk about that. Okay. So we have this guy who's done it all in the theological sense. He's had a president back him against Joseph McCarthy. He's been an apostate. Almost tried for heresy, rocked the Christian world to its very foundations, been through very difficult life, womanizing, a son who was probably gay who took his own life, sadly. And then he decided, and throughout his career, he'd been to Israel several times, studying in Israel. And then he wanted to write a book about the historic Jesus. So you got to understand that while he questioned the so-called divinity of Jesus, he did not for one instance take away from Jesus as a great teacher and a mystic. In fact, I'm going to digress for a second, then we're going to come back to his passing. Time magazine in 1968 reviewed his book, The Other Side, the one that you have there, wherein it stated that shortly after the death of Bishop Pike's son, Jim, when Pike returned to Cambridge, strange paranormal experiences started happening. And they talk about the 8:19. Clocks in his apartment kept stopping at 8:19, the hour when James Jr. died in New York. Books and cards kept toppling over to an angle that matched the hands of a clock at 8:19. And then Pike contacted Enna Twigg, like you indicated, Dave. And during the reading, this is what came through. All right, so according to Bishop Pike, the spirit of his son came through and said, "I am not in purgatory, but something like hell here," which I found very interesting. Then he said, "Jesus was a seer," S-E-E-R, a seer. They talk about him, they meaning the other spirits, a mystic, a seer, that he is triumphant. But they don't talk about him as a savior, but as an example. So this comes through. Of course, he puts this in his book and begins to preach about this. But the Time Review went on to say that not all readers are likely to be convinced. They may ask why a bishop who has been so skeptical of received Christian tradition should be so readily to accept the assurances of assorted spiritualists that there are cats in the afterlife and that husbands and wives will experience a new kind of non-sexual spiritual relationship. As for the dead Jim, he appears in the book to be so vague and formless as to seem nothing more than a loving father's wish fulfillment. Now, I can see why somebody who doesn't believe in mediumship or spirituality would say that, but it is also very apparent to me that this person has no understanding of what it is like to engage in spirit communication.
Well, let me say one thing. As a father, if one of my children died, the message, hey, I'm not really in purgatory, it's a lot like hell, is not the message I want to hear either. So
no,
to say that this is spoon feeding a grieving father what he wants to hear, that's not what you want to hear.
No.
But he gave concepts of what life and death really are, what it means. And none of it was blasphemy, unless, of course, you're part of a larger church organization who looks down upon all of that. But the fact that he's coming forward and being that honest and giving the concept that, and again, it's up to whichever theological debate you believe. A lot of us go through a cleansing and healing process after death, that we have to go through healing. We have to face the things that we've done, where there may not be a theologic hell. There is that hell of realizing what it's felt like to hurt everybody that you've hurt in your life and how your emotions affected everybody else. And that could be the realism of what hell meant to Jimmy Bishop, his son.
Absolutely. And that's a really good point that you brought out, Dave. I'm not in purgatory, but something like hell here, you know, because people always accuse mediums. Oh, you tell people what they want to hear. Now, speaking for myself, I never say or transmit anything that isn't conveyed to me. And I've had people say, well, I don't like what you told me. It's like, okay, a reading isn't about going to hear what you want to hear. It is about transmitting what is conveyed to you from the spirit.
Right.
And so I, you know, when I read this review, I pondered it for a while. But when he said that, oh, the formless Jim seems nothing more than a, well, spirits, you know, people expect every spirit to come through and start giving, you know, their social security number. It's like, hello, I'm the spirit of Jim Jr. Here's my name, rank, serial number, social security number, and, you know, and all those facts and data. You got to realize we're dealing with electromagnetic energy, and they're emitting these waves of frequency, which are going into the medium's brain and then getting converted into recognizable concepts based on memories, feelings, and cultural associations of the medium. All right. It would be very nice if it were like on the show, we have a crawl going by. It'd be very nice if it were a crawl, you know, and oftentimes we get some very specific information, but a lot of it, you may get sensations and feelings. Also, a lot of people expect everything to make sense the second it comes in. There is a process after the reading, which I call the unfolding. Think of a reading like a flower, blooms, blossoms, unfolds. It can take hours, days, weeks, years for the full meaning of a reading to make sense to somebody. And it is pretty clear to me that Bishop Pike understood that he studied psychic phenomenon enough to realize that it just wasn't instantaneous downloads of information, because a statement like I am not in purgatory, but something like hell here, does that mean the archetypal hell with the fire and brimstone and the jerk with the pitchfork sticking in the wazoo? Or could that mean I'm on a different frequency because of, you know, than people that led a less volatile life?
Right.
You know, there's a lot there. And Dave, you brought up a very interesting point when you said that how people of faith go through these quandaries. You know, Mother Teresa. Now, when you think of Mother Teresa, you're going to think of a more spiritual, pious person. She went through years of doubting the existence of God. Now, if Mother Teresa can have doubts, then for those of you who are listening who are having doubts with your belief system, you're in pretty darn good company. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, and I think this is pretty clear from everything that I've studied about Bishop Pike. How can you have faith without doubt? It's part of the journey.
Right. That's part of what faith is, right? It's asking, it's challenging, and then accepting. You know, I've mentioned it on the show. I'll mention it again. When you talk about God, when my mom died, I was filled with anger and rage toward God. And I had to go up and do the eulogy for my mom. And Tim took me aside because he could see the seething. And he's like, talk to me, D. What's wrong? What's going on? And I'm like, what's wrong? Dude, my mom's dead. You know, she was cheated out of this and short-chated out of that and ripped off of this and now this and that and the other. And he goes, Dave, you have every right to be hurt right now, man. And it's real easy to point the finger at God because we want something to blame for why we hurt so bad.
Yeah. Why did you do this to me?
Yeah. Yeah. And he said some clear things. Like one thing he said to me that really hit home is the reason it hurts so bad is because you had this gift that you no longer have. And that gift was given to you by God. Your mom was your gift and she was your biggest supporter. She was your friend. She meant the world to you. He goes, but dude, look at how you're looking at things. And I could see that in reading Bishop Pike's book and Hans Holzer's book about Bishop Pike. It was taking my complaints about, you know what? Hey, my mom finally retired and she was going to go travel with my dad and get to see the world. And he said, Dave, your mom traveled her whole life with your dad. She met the man of her dreams. She traveled the world with your father. She worked in a job she loved doing. And when she had to retire, her story came to an end, but she got to do everything. She saw her grandchildren, her great grandchildren. She saw your happiness. She saw you turn into this. She had these moments. Dude, you got to look at what she did have and how full her life was. And it totally reflected back. And then it was something of, oh man, it is. It's how you look at a situation. And coming from somebody who deals with depression and anxiety, it's real easy to say, yeah, just don't feel that way. Yeah, that never works, Mark. Right? But that's not what Tim said.
Yeah, just stop being depressed, you know.
But that's not what Tim said. He said he goes, You're looking at this head on at the problem right now. Now come out and look from this angle and realize, man, your mom got to do this. Your mom got to see all these things. Your mom lived long enough to see you do the show and get to do radio and meet all these paranormal people and all the things that she accomplished through you. And it was like, wow. So I could see in Bishop Pike's world, as well as he's making these connections, how that's rewiring the concepts we've all been trained to believe or conceive. And now there's much more to it. And he starts having quite profound experiences with the dead and with the thought of what life and death really means.
Right. And so after all this comes out and he gets basically, even though he didn't get charged with heresy, they pulled the rug out from under him. And for somebody with as dynamic, controversial and public a career, his death was almost fitting. He and Diane went to Israel because he wanted to follow in the footsteps of the historic Jesus. So they drove out. They flew into Tel Aviv. They rented a car. Now, this is what I don't understand. They only bought two Cokes and they drove off into the Judean desert. Okay. And I've been in a lot of deserts. I've been in deserts in Asia and in the United States and actually in the areas in the Pacific. They're hot. Okay. That's why they call them deserts. Well, their car got stuck in some sand and they didn't have a map, or they had a map, but they didn't know where they were. This was years before GPS. They didn't even have a compass. And so they started leaving, looking for water. They found a shady spot, but he was not in great health, big time chain smoker. So Diane left him there to go for help. Eventually she found it. When they returned to the shady spot, he was nowhere to be found. His body was found some days later. It apparently he'd wandered off and he did find a water source, but then left some clothes there so they could track him. But his body was found in a ravine. It appeared that he was climbing up a canyon wall and then plunged to his death. Interestingly enough, his body was in a kneeling position when they found him. So he died in the Judean desert searching for the historical Jesus, maybe this is tragedy, or maybe this really was the dynamic end to a dynamic life.
Now, can the True Crime Tuesday aspect of my brain kick in for a minute here?
Absolutely.
Because when I started reading this, I'm like, the wife survives, and then he's found dead long after. Is there any chance there was foul play? They had to look into that at some point, didn't they, Mark?
They absolutely did. But, you know, it doesn't appear that way, because from all accounts, they really did love each other. And you got to realize, too, she was 24 years younger than him. But then maybe she wanted to get rid of him. But he was only 56 when he died.
I know, but I'm only 53 and my wife's almost 40. And I'm pretty sure she's still trying to figure out ways to get me to go up a mountain cliff with her. If you ever see me posting on Instagram that I'm out having a walk on a mountainside, Mark, send a helicopter, because she's going to shove me off.
She's going to shove you off. Yeah, you know, Dave, I have to say the suspicious lawyer in me started thinking about that, too, because it was just a little bit too much. But if she did try to kill him, but why would they just go into the Judean desert with two cans of Coke? I mean, I've been in some deserts. And you better have water and something to create shade and have a backup plan. I mean, it's miserable. I mean, it's interesting and all that, but it is absolutely miserable. So, yeah, I was wondered about that, too, but it doesn't appear to be the case. On the other hand, we must always keep an open mind, because this is Darkness Radio.
That's right. I don't mean to take it to a nefarious place, but it's the question. Right? You got, when you're out, anytime a husband and wife go out together and one is older and then suddenly missing, and then they find him dead, but the wife makes it, you got to ask some questions. And it would be the same if it was the other way around as well, I'm sure. But so this tragic end, and one of the things, too, he was going out in hopes of finding the cave that Jesus went to when he kind of squared off with the devil.
Right.
Right. He wanted to fight his challenges and kind of face these aspects as well. So you're right. Did he find the historical Christ? Did he find it in those moments? And there he is in the kneeling supine position, you know, of prayer to whatever in death. That's pretty powerful. But his story physically ends there. They bury him in Israel, right? But that's not the end of his soul tale, is it?
No, I mean, his legacy lives on. I mean, and his wife Diane is an ordained priest in the Episcopal religion. She's still going strong. She'd be a fascinating person to interview. I don't know if she grants interviews anymore, but
well, she might have before I started asking if she killed him. Here's something cool. If you do find the book online, The Psychic World of Bishop Pike by Hans Holzer, it says, in a dramatic confrontation, the author makes contact with the spirit of the bishop himself through the transmediumship of the eminent medium Ethel Johnson Myers, who you've seen featured on Holzer Files with us, folks. The Psychic World of Bishop Pike is a unique account that only the author could have written, for he knows intimately both Bishop Pike's world and the psychic world as well. Hans Holzer had also worked with Bishop Pike in making a documentary film about the bishop's parapsychological experiences. And, you know, it was pretty interesting that they do come through and that she finds a way to communicate, or I should say he finds a way to communicate through this medium and goes through Ethel and again gives some pretty compelling communication to Dr. Holzer, which is outlined in the book, and others enough to make them believe that they truly did come into contact with Bishop Pike, and that, you know, they too get some answers to what the other side is all about.
Certainly. And somebody like Bishop Pike, his spirit would definitely want to be illuminating our understanding of the afterlife. So I think his story, like all of our stories, it does not end a physical death. You know, we have to realize that we're only living in the material world for now. And, you know, Dave, I want to revisit something when you're talking about your mom. And I know how close you guys were. Mm-hmm. We grieve as deeply as we have loved. And that's why you grieved so heavily, because your mm-hmm. love, the love for your mother, could fill the Pacific Ocean and then some. But we also have to realize that grief is the price of love. But on the other hand, a life without love is not much of a life at all. And that's part of the human experience and living in the material world.
And thank you, Madonna, for that last line. We appreciate it.
Actually, I got it from George Harrison. And George Harrison actually managed Madonna for a period. And he produced that movie that she was in with Sean Penn. But where George Harrison got the term living in the material world comes from Hinduism.
Right.
Which I've been studying since actually I was a child. You know,
you just stick with that, Mark. We all know that on that other wall over there, you've got Madonna's like a prayer poster hanging up still. You can't fool me.
You know what, though? What's Madonna? She's like 62 now. She looks awesome. I mean, it's like, you go, Madonna.
Let me see. We've got a couple questions here. Libby asks, how can phenomena be researched using scientific methods? How do you create a control baseline and then test situations that are comparable to prove it? Which is, that's part of the big problem, Libby, when you have people like Houdini and the amazing Randy, James Randi Foundation, who are doing the $1 million challenge. They would set forth parameters that were hard to mark. How do you prove a ghost exists in my house doing it in a lab? And the parameters they set always took it from the location where the ability was strongest and wanted to replicate it in a situation where we know science has proven with the slit test that they could shoot these particles and the particles will act in an erratic way until you look at them. And then they go through the slits how they're supposed to. And then when you stop, they start jumbling up again. So when you put somebody into that position, and I'm not making excuses for mediums and paranormalists, because you know, you want to see it, but I would love to see them come to a location and be in there. But then again, you know, you do these, Libby, you know, Peter Popoff, the religious leader, is still very, very popular, even though James Randi busted him and showed how he was doing the faith healing and that he had an earbud. Somebody was feeding him information on all these people. But belief and want and desire sometimes outweigh logic, and they'll surpass that. But there are methodologies, and over in Europe, and I know Mark has studied over there as well, they take parapsychology much more seriously, and they do run through stringent tests. There is the documentary that just came out. Caroline Corey was on our show earlier in 2020. Superhuman, I believe, is the name of the documentary, and it's amazing. But they were showing things. They were doing tests out of the blue, you know, like putting there was like a foil wrapper from a piece of gum on a needle inside a jar that could not be influenced in any way. And just her having her hands outside the jar and going like this and thinking, she started spinning. That's one way that you start to test these philosophies of what we're capable of truly doing. And I think that's what Bishop Pike was really discussing in a lot of his experiences, was that let's not close our minds to the possibilities. And now, if you guys haven't been paying attention, the current popes, the last two popes, have both come out and said, the world is a much bigger place. The universe is a much bigger place than we've ever thought it was before. Sure. It's okay to believe in life on other planets, and there's magic all around us, right? There are miracles that take place every day if you watch for them. And replicating them may not always be the easiest, but it's challenging, and that's what we need to do. That's what I think excites us, and why there are so many people this late at night on a Thursday watching an interview between Dave and Mark, because let's shake up a paradigm. Let's try to see what else there could be. What are the new possibilities that we can examine?
We also have to realize that even if there is not currently a test, the technology to verify this doesn't mean that it cannot be developed. And I've been in, I've seen Dr. Gary Schwartz's soul phone. And let me tell you something, the technology to communicate and to prove the existence of spirits is on its way. So, you know, because people say that, well, there's no way to prove this. There's no scientific method. It's like, well, maybe not now. I mean, and one of the analogies I always like to use is, what was the cause of disease before the invention of the microscope? People thought it was noxious vapors, it was demonic possession, it was a black cat walking in front of you. And then all of a sudden the microscope shows germs, fungus, viruses, all of the parasites that get into our systems and make us ill. So, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, people thought that illness was caused by demons until science proved otherwise. So it's just a matter of time.
Donna Leah says, or every spirit to have the ability to communicate clearly, conspicuously, if a spirit is in scattered form, then it is learning to come into focus. That may seem like a form of hell. And that's an interesting concept, Mark, because we've been talking about that a lot lately. That how is it that grandma's spirit is at her childhood home and you see her as a little girl and she's at her college dorm as a teenage woman and then she's at the home where she died? We've had so many, and this has been my theory on it, we've had so many experiences, maybe something traumatic, maybe grandma loved that house. That was the funnest, best part of her life when she was a little girl. So that's why a part of her will always remain. When she was a teenager, maybe her roommate committed suicide and her soul broke and a piece of it stays there. And where she lived out the rest of her life with her family and friends, that's a big part of it. So there's these reclamations of soul shards that we have to do to pull back together, which, as she said, Donna points out beautifully, maybe that's the hell. It's existing but missing parts of you and lost and having to revisit each part to pull it back in, like Thanos and the Infinity Stones, right? We've got to bring them all back together to become the one complete soul that we are. And then once we've realigned and experienced those moments where we lost those parts of us to give us the perspective of what happened, the learning, how we affected others, how they affected us, that very well could be a big aspect towards what we're dealing with. You have written on this kind of stuff extensively. What do you make of that kind of concept?
I look at it as spirits are multidimensional beings that can be in several places simultaneously, because we're all patched into what I call the collective consciousness, and that we're think of your soul as a drop of water. And when you die, that drop of water, that electromagnetic field plunges into this eternal sea of consciousness. And because it's electromagnetic energy, everything in the EM spectrum moves at the speed of light. And so that's why spirits can appear to or be in several locations at one time. And this is also, you know, very difficult for us to understand, because we are living in the material world and in finite form, yet we are attempting to understand infinite beings. So, you know, we can do the best we can with our limited and restricted perceptive abilities. And, you know, this isn't some woohoo thing. If you talk to myself included, being an NDE-er, but near-death experiences, how people talk about the perception is not only vertical, but like 360 degrees. You know, like right now, you know, you and I see in a linear fashion through our eyes, whereas a spirit perceives in a spherical manner.
Real quickly for folks, Mark, I thought you might find this interesting. We began doing prayer and healing requests on Darkness Radio back in the day. And we would, you know, post it on our MySpace page and such, and do these things. And this next person who's popping up a question, Cheryl, was one of those people. We got a message from one of her teammates. They're like, hey, I don't know that I believe in all this prayer and healing stuff, but Cheryl collapsed. I think it was on New Year's Eve. Cheryl, correct me if I'm wrong. She collapsed and had an asthma attack, and they're about to perform last rites. Can you put out a healing and prayer request? And we put out one and had hundreds and eventually thousands of people from all around the world weighing in and saying prayers and sending healing and energy and just positivity to a woman who was not aware that this was coming. So when you say, what is the true power of prayer? Well, if you believe in a curse, it happens. If you believe in prayer, it happens. Cheryl as I recall, was up and awake the next day, out of the hospital within a day or two. And as a lifelong asthmatic, she has not had to do much with her puffer and has had a pretty powerful rebirth, if you will, after that moment. So that's living testament right there to the power of people coming together for good. Cheryl asks, don't they say that spirits come in different ways than ghosts? Is it true that ghosts are memories imprinted in the area of high emotion and spirits are people that are trying to communicate?
Yeah, I agree with that. There's three schools of haunting. And one of them is that it's actually a ghost is a residual energy echo because matter retains vibration. So your question already answers itself. Ghosts are memories imprinted. That's what I call residual energy echo. So let's say there's a murder somewhere. That vibration stays there. But encountering that ghost is no more a sentient conscious spirit then your reflection in a mirror is you. So I do agree with that.
All right. And thank you very much. And Cheryl, it's always been a pleasure. I'm glad that you're still with us on this side and that the prayers came through for you. Here she says right here, you're right. The next day I awakened and I haven't had an attack since. That was 15 years ago, Mark.
Awesome. Well, Cheryl, I'm glad you're here and we look forward to you coming back.
And, that'll cost you $22,565 now that we can bill you for it, now that we know you've survived it. The darkness bill is on the way. Just go ahead and use your supernatural visa to be a part of that. Let's see here. Trying to look. If you have questions, feel free to throw them in there. If I've missed them already, I will try to get them back out. Lena says that she truly believes in prayer and intentions. Very powerful. And that's why, you know, in prayer for the soul, I always feel, you know, I do that at every location, hoping that if there is a spirit lost there, that the light will open, the spirit will find its way and that they'll move on. But putting forth that energy, I can tell you this, watching people come together in positivity and in good has created unbelievable miracles in the lives of myself and so many other people. Watching people build hatred and rage does nothing ever to make things better. Hatred is like drinking poison and then waiting for the other person to die. That's not how it works. And so you guys got to let that go to move on. Let's see here. Now with this, hold on. I know I had one more comment in here I wanted to get to. Sammy says a memory also holds energy. Perhaps the age you were in that memory affects how the energy manifests itself in a haunting.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Good theory on that one.
Yeah,
I like
that. That's a good one, Sammy.
Thank you very much. So, you know, when you do a deeper dive into Bishop Pike like this, and again, here's the picture of Hans Holzer with Bishop Pike. When you do a deeper dive into this and you find somebody like this who is so forward thinking, even back in the 60s, Mark, I mean, what does that say to you today in the 21st century about what we're really capable of?
Well, the possibilities are endless. You know, what I love about Bishop Pike, it was very clear that he was a genius and he was disliked in the Episcopalian church. There was a lot of jealousy there, too. He got all the attention. He wrote the controversial books. He had the TV show. And just because people are members of the clergy doesn't mean they're not backstabbing, manipulative and hateful. And that's one of the hardest things that he was able had a hard time comprehending was how spiteful his fellow members of the clergy were. But despite that his thirst for knowledge and the quest for understanding, what it says to us in the 21st century is that the quest is continuing. Our technology is better now. Also, mediumship has come out of the fringe element and is being discussed openly. And I think that that's really positive. You know, when he said things that, you know, about James Randi, you know, he created, what do they call it in Star Trek? The Kobayashi Maru, his million-dollar challenge. I had some mathematicians analyze it, and they said it's impossible to win this because he was judge, jury, and executioner. Okay, so no matter what evidence or whatever you presented, he was the one that decided. No, you don't get the $1 million. It's kind of like the Greek myth of Tantalus. You know, he's in Hades. He tries to reach for the food and it gets too high, or tries to drink the water and it vanishes. No matter what, you're never going to be satisfied there. So there's always going to be people like that. I never, you know, what he did with Peter Popoff, though. Popoff definitely deserved it. First off, he was not a psychic. He was a phony religious fanatic, and his wife was backstage broadcasting to him. He had an earpiece in, and one of Randy's people, they started scanning the lower bands of AM radio, and they caught it. And she'd be like, lady in the third row, fifth from their left. She had a tumor, you know, because people had to fill out. They had to fill out a questionnaire before they go in about all their ailments and things. They give it to his wife. Then she's backstage transmitting it to him. So if you ever go see a medium or an evangelist and they make you fill out a questionnaire about what's wrong with you, and then all of a sudden the guy, that's when you take this very skeptically.
Agreed. The very curious case of Bishop Pike. I recommend getting the book. Go online, watch some of the videos. They're pretty compelling. And I think there's even just one of him talking for about an hour and a half about these concepts and beliefs and challenging the church paradigm. Again, never in a disrespectful manner, but wanting us to stop following blindly. You know, there's more power. It's kind of like a sales mantra when I was in sales. You know, they would tell us, stop being upset when your buyer asks you questions. The best buyer is an informed buyer. The ones that just buy blindly end up coming back later mad at you because they didn't, you know, it didn't do everything that they thought it could, or they had misconceptions. The ones that you lead to the water, show them how to drink and send them on their way, are the ones that are going to be more fulfilled. And I always thought that was important. And what religion should really be is forgiving, loving, all inclusive. And you know, obviously I'm not talking about murderers and child rapists and things like that. So I can already tell I'll get some emails. Well, what about these people? Are they okay? How about the ones making love to sheep? Should that be okay? No, obviously, you know that, but I'm just
saying. You get those emails too, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's about inclusivity and loving one another. It's like the people that beat up other people in this paranormal field. You know what? We're all in it for the same deal. We all want to have an experience to understand what is out there above and beyond the reality that we have here. Coming together is how we break those paradigms and start to learn together by everybody hoarding their little ball of knowledge, thinking theirs is the right one, instead of sharing it and seeing how it might create something even more powerful. That's a sad loss.
Yeah.
So hopefully people are going to be able to kind of become a little bit more open in this. And we do these live events. I've met so many of you. Thank you all for coming up to me, and got to meet our friend Cindy, who's been in the chat ever since we started doing these live ones, and so many others that come on up and say hi at the events. Come on up. It's great to meet you. You get your hugs. We'll talk. We love hearing your thoughts and beliefs and just being a part of our world. So thank you very much for letting us into yours. Mark, talk to me a little bit. I know you got to get going, but what's going on with you? I know you've got the new book, Afterlife Frequency. Can you give us a little taste? What does that mean?
The afterlife frequency, for thousands of years, people have reported contact with spirits either through a medium, maybe a visitation in a dream, near-death experiences, deathbed visions, and they all occur when the energetic vibration of the human soul touches the higher energy of the afterlife frequency. And this book is a riveting adventure into the afterlife that takes you around the globe and from the cosmic to the subatomic. And I've spent 5 years writing this, and probably at least 10 years researching it. And so far it's been endorsed by 10 of the top near-death experience and afterlife researchers in the world. And that comes out in October, and you can find out more about that. And please sign up for my newsletter when you go to my website, afterlifefrequency.com, and you'll find out the next time I'm going to be on True Crime Tuesday and Darkness Radio, and about my radio show, The Psychic in the Dock, every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And I've got a lot of events, so you can find out about it and booking a reading with me at afterlifefrequency.com. And Dave, you got all sorts of really cool stuff. That conference at the winery That just sounds like way too much fun.
Oh, it is. I've been there, four times, Belvoir Winery, the Oddfellows home. It's a crazy place filled with a lot of weird activity. We had some really cool, profound, holy beep moments at that winery, and I'm looking forward to getting back there and having some experiences again. But Mark, it's always great catching up with you. Tell people about your podcast so people know a little bit about what The Psychic and the Doc is.
Yeah, The Psychic and
the Doc. It's not just them thinking you're sitting on the dock of the bay, just a medium watching the tide roll away.
My co-host is Dr. Pat Basile, and she founded the Transformation Network about, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. She's the host of the award-winning The Dr. Pat Show. It's about 40 or more shows on Transformation Network. And The Psychic and the Doc, all subjects are on the table. No topic is taboo. We have fascinating guests. We're going to have Dr. John Alexander on July 1st for World UFO Day. He used to be head of the U.S. military's UFO project. And the show is live, and we do call-in shows where people call in, and I'll do a mini reading. And then Dr. Pat adds her intuitive, street-smart spiritualism. And she is a behavioral psychologist, world-renowned, has a degree from Columbia. She's hilarious. We have such a great time on this show. And that's The Psychic and the Doc every Thursday. You can find out more about it at afterlifefrequency.com.
Remember, you can check me out at all the different events I'll be a part of this year by going to darknessevents.com. Remember, if you'd like to get a copy of my book, The Other Side, the autographed Holzer Files card, and the Darkness Radio decal, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. My wife will send you a PayPal invoice. Once it's paid, we'll sign and ship those out right away. We've got a new selection of the cards in, so we can continue to fulfill those orders. I've got plenty of copies of the books and the decals we'd love to get out for you. If you're just interested in just the book, just the decal, just the autograph card, you could just put that in the email and Winnie will bill you accordingly. So that's that. Thank you very much for tuning in, spending a little bit more time with us. Mark, thanks for the great research and the information on Bishop Pike.
Thank you, Dave. It's great. And hey, Army of Darkness, keep tuning in. And thank you, Dave, for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you, man. I always appreciate having you on. I do want to make a quick mention again. Next week, we'll be back. Grave Secrets, The Haunting of the Howard Dickinson House. That was a crazy ass story. And that's the one where Shane goes all kind of Michael Myers on me in that one. So you guys want the backstory, make sure you tune in and be a part of the program with us next week. We'll be back live Thursday evening. We'll continue doing other Holzer's Ghosts like this, cases that we didn't cover, some of the more interesting, compelling parts of his life and investigations. And we've got some other great guests and other topics, a couple more round tables coming up we're going to do as well, where I've got some UFO, Bigfoot, medium, ghost guests that'll all be on together, and we'll be taking your questions and just having a nice conversation. So make sure you keep tuning in for that. Here on YouTube, folks, subscribe. It's free. Hit the little bell so that you never miss any of the new content that we put out. And feel free to make comments below, and I will do my best to answer any questions there. You can also email me if you've had a strange experience with the supernatural, whether it's funny, scary, heartwarming, weird. I want to know about them, and whether it's ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, psychic phenomena, being felt up by a ghost, whatever weird experience you've had, I want to know about it. dave@darknessradio.com. We'll share it on an upcoming episode. That's it for this week. Stay safe, be kind to one another, and we will see you again soon right here on the Darkness on the Edge of Town.